The views expressed in this podcast are those of the contributors, not of Q1 Media. You're listening to the Gotcha Movies podcast, the official podcast of GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
I'm Taylor DeVorsky.
I'm Kyle Jenkins.
I'm Lila Standen.
How are you guys doing on this Sunday morning?
Awake.
Doing
great.
Awake, great.
Swell. Yeah.
And swell. Okay.
Just amazing. Yeah.
Good. Good to hear.
How are you, Ryan?
I'm good. I just woke up a little bit ago, so I'm a little groggy trying to wake up, but I'm doing really good. Happy to be talking movies with you guys. Lila, welcome back from the dead. You have been on this podcast.
Thank you. I have been resurrected from movie purgatory. I'm back.
Good. We're glad to have you back. So before we kick off our reviews for this week, a little festival in Austin just wrapped up, the 10th annual Fantastic Fest, which Taylor, you had a chance to see some movies there. Why don't you discuss, I don't know, any good ones, bad ones, kind of how the festival went as a whole, and your thoughts on it.
Well, let's see. Unfortunately, Jenny couldn't be here with us today because she also went and actually saw far, far more than I did. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say, she's also kind of like a festival mainstay because she's been going for a couple years now.
She's been doing a Fantastic Fest for a while. This is actually my first year I ever went. But, so I saw about 10 or so films, all told. And I saw some really great ones. I saw a couple not so grand ones, which I may or may not go into, but yeah. So I got to see, my favorite one I got to see is I got to see Nightcrawler.
I was just about to ask how Nightcrawler was.
And it was incredible. I absolutely loved it.
Good to hear.
Absolute career best performance from Jake Gyllenhaal.
Ooh, and this is coming off Prisoners and Enemy, too.
Coming off Prisoners and Enemy, but this is my favorite Jake Gyllenhaal performance.
Okay, cool. Good to hear.
Yeah, Dan Gilroy, who wrote the script, it's a great script, and he also directed it. It was his first time directing, and you cannot tell that. It's just directed so well.
Wow, and I believe he's Tony Gilroy's brother, if I'm not mistaken, who did Bourne Legacy and Michael Clayton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then Dan Gilroy also wrote the script for Bourne Legacy.
Yeah, that's correct.
But no, so Nightcrawler was far and away my favorite film. Let's see, what else did I like a lot? My second favorite film... was it Swedish? I forget the exact nationality. Maybe it was German. But it's this awesome little horror flick called Goodnight Mommy. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it.
I haven't, no.
It's this, it was brought here as a secret screening. First, they didn't tell anybody the name. I caught it a few days later after they'd done a few more screenings. But this was just, it was brought as a secret screening. Tim League, CEO of Alamo, just kind of tweeted this film is likely going to be your favorite genre film from this fest. It's mine. And so it's this film with these two little twin boys, twin brothers are just kind of waiting at home. And their mother comes home. It doesn't really show you where she's been, but she's bandaged from surgery. And she just kind of starts treating them weird, acting weird. And they're just convinced is this our mom? And then they just kind of, and it's about them trying to solve this issue. And I don't even want to spoil much because I knew nothing about it. And it was excellent, knowing nothing about it. But it's just kind of, it's super disquieting. It's disturbing, but not in an excessive way. It's just, I loved it. That's definitely, if anyone ever gets a chance to see Goodnight Mommy, definitely highly, highly recommend it.
It sounds intriguing. I'm definitely going to seek it out whenever it hits VOD or theaters, however.
Yeah, I don't remember if I exactly, but who announced it, the guy who announced it at the start of the screening, I think he said Radius just picked it up.
Oh, okay. So it should get a simultaneous theatrical and VOD release at some point.
I believe he said Radius picked it up 3 weeks ago, so they just kind of made this deal to get it playing Fantastic Fest right before the fest started.
Nice. Which I just read an article that Radius had quite a showing at Fantastic Fest this year.
Yeah, because they also had, I also saw Horns, the new Alex Aja.
Alex Aja, yeah.
That was so bad.
Daniel Radcliffe movie. I thought it was just okay. I didn't love it. I had actually, if you haven't seen my review yet on the site, I liked elements of it. I thought Daniel Radcliffe was great in it. He's excellent. And the humorous elements of it, I think the humor part works really well. But certain elements of it, like the mystery element, just kind of fall pretty flat. Which I was actually reading Jenny's interview, and she was telling me about it. She interviewed the director. And he was saying that, like, you know, which is apparently in the book, I haven't read the book, so, but apparently in the book, there's, like, it hides no mystery as to who the actual killer is. And this is being a film, if you don't know what Horns is about, it's a film where Ig Parrish, played by Daniel Radcliffe, is accused of murdering his girlfriend, who's played by Juno Temple in the film, her name's Mara. And, like, everyone in this town just starts to believe he, like, did it unanimously. No one believes otherwise. And one day after all this, he starts finding horns start sprouting from his forehead. And through these horns, like, all the people in the town just kind of start divulging to him, like, their darkest secrets and just things they want to tell him. He starts using it as a way to, like, find out who actually killed his girlfriend. But they also, the whole people divulging secrets has a very dark, humorous element to it, which I liked a lot. But apparently, as I was saying, the book doesn't kind of hide any mystery of, like, who the killer is. It tells you up front. But they try to make more of the mystery element in this movie, and I don't know, that part just kind of falls flat. And it's kind of tonally all over the place, because it is a murder mystery. It has some horror elements, and it also just has comedy elements, but some work better than others. It's just a bit all over the place tonally. Oh, and it's 2 hours long, which is too long for this kind of movie.
That sounds a little excessive, but...
Yeah.
But I'll definitely be seeing that as well at some point, whenever it gets released... At the end of this month, or end of October, excuse me.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But then another, like, I think my third favorite film, another great film I really liked, that Jenny also, I know, loved, was Spring.
Yes, I've heard all about Spring. Just tell us a little bit about it without, like, diving too much into spoilers, because this one, not only did you and Jenny like it, but I saw a lot of positive stuff coming from, like, IndieWire and the, like, Twitter universe. It kind of blew up on my feed.
It's about this young man, Evan, played by Lou Taylor. Is it pronounced Pucci?
He's from the Evil Dead remake, right? He looks like the teacher from Beavis and Butthead.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is him. He's in this, and, like, it opens, his mother dies, and he's, like, lives in LA, I think, or just, like, California is where, I don't know what it specifically says. But, so after his mom passes, he just kind of decides to take off and just takes a plane, moves to Italy, basically. And while they're, like, during his first few days there, he meets this this girl, and they just start this, you know, they start a relationship. It's very, I think a good review said it's like Before Sunset and, like, Linklater meets H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, wow.
Which is, because it's just, like, the relationship, you know, it's very almost Before Sunrise, Before Sunset-esque.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a horror element because of, oh my God, I'm blanking on her name. Let me look it up real quick.
But the fact that somehow can compare Linklater and H.P. Lovecraft and combine it to something that's an interesting.
Like, the romance angle of it is, like, just pretty, it's pretty strong romance angle just on its own. I'm trying to look up what her character's name was, / the actress's name. I forgot briefly. It's Nadia Hilker is the actress name. Louise, that's her name. And, okay. But then there's just a secret about her that, you know, you find out as the film progresses, and I don't really want to spoil it at all. Just like that, just know that it adds a horror and kind of sci-fi element to the film. And I don't really want to go much further in, because this film will be getting a release. Draft House Films actually picked it up at the fest, and I think they're planning an early 2015, like, VOD and theatrical release.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. That'll be a while, but...
But, yeah, there's still not terribly long, just a few months. So I think they were doing, like, January.
Cool. Well, whenever it hits, I'm excited.
So that one's really, really good. What else did I see over the course of this? Like I said, I didn't see as much as Jenny did because I was still busy with school and working.
Mm-hmm.
But
you watched Tusk, obviously.
We discussed Tusk. I'd have to see that opening night. I also saw ABC's A Death 2 opening night. I don't think we discussed it on that podcast, but just like It's the same as the first one. If you like the first one, you're gonna like this one. But you know, with 26 shorts that are like, you know, 30 some odd directors, like, some are gonna hit, some are gonna miss.
Yeah, I never saw the first one. A friend of mine I know really hated it, and for some reason I just can't bring myself to watch it. I don't know what it is.
I don't hate either of them. It's just like, it's they are lengthy films, because they are like 2 hours each, and it's just 26 shorts. I mean, I like the idea. The idea is interesting, and some of the directors are real clever about it. Like, I honestly think one of the strongest ones from ABC's The Death 2 was the opening one, is for Amateur, so they started off really strong, which was actually directed by E.L. Katz, who did Cheap Thrills.
Yes, I was looking forward to at least seeing what his short was going to be like. I love Cheap Thrills.
Yeah, I love Cheap Thrills as well, and his short is one of my favorites, in the actual thing. That's like the one that I even think is actually still sticks with me.
Nice.
Because it was really creative. So I saw that. What did I see? I saw Horns. I'm just trying to go in order of what I saw. I did see, let's see. Oh, I finally got to see Housebound.
Oh, yes.
Which Jenny saw back at South by and loved. And I loved finally getting to see it here. It was great.
Nice, good to hear. It's worth the hype from the sounds of it.
Yeah, because it comes out next month on VOD, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so it's excellent.
Nice. I actually, I think we discussed either off mic or on the podcast last week. I thought it was already on VOD, I was maybe getting it mixed up with another film. It was Honeymoon. I was getting it mixed up with.
Oh, yeah, Honeymoon. Yeah. No, Housebound comes out next month, but they screened it here at Fantastic Fest. It was a great film to see with a crowd. It's just, like, it's really, really funny. It's a horror comedy. Nice. But it's, like, so it's really, really funny. It's really well acted. It's really well shot. I think it costs, I want to say they said it only costs $250,000 to produce.
Oh, wow. That's always impressive when that happens.
It looks great. So the effects are great. I know it also took them, like, 3 years to produce it as well. But so that one I loved, heard the hype. Let's see what else. I know they screened the Guest again. I didn't check that out because I've seen it already.
Mm-hmm. Still has not opened in Portland.
It's in Austin now too. It opened Friday. I think it said it's gonna be everywhere next weekend though. So
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I know the screening went over really well though here at Fantastic Fest too. Like people I was talking to after the movie just said, like, you know, they loved it.
Good to know. Well, good. Yeah. It sounds like overall it was a solid experience, even though you maybe didn't get to see as many films, that, like, you saw some great ones, and the fact that they could be curated and that you can come on here and talk about them and get people to watch them is always exciting.
Yeah, so those were, that was all in all, like, the best ones I got to see. So, and then, like I said, I did see some duds, but, you know.
Yeah, they're probably not worth the breath of air to even discuss them.
Nah, so.
Cool. Well, awesome. So I hope to make it down next year for Fantastic Fest 11. So awesome. Well, thank you, Taylor, for discussing Fantastic Fest with us and keeping us updated on what to see and what to avoid. And we won't even discuss what to avoid.
Yeah. But you know what to see now.
I do know what to see. We do. We are better for it.
Yeah, you are. Joe, see Spring.
Yes.
And see Goodnight, Mommy.
Spring and Goodnight, Mommy. I'm making a list.
And I know you're going to see Nightcrawler.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So, yeah, awesome.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Have a good rest of your podcast.
I will. Thank you. Thank you for coming on, man. So we don't really discuss TV too much on the podcast, but when there's TV news and pilots as big as what happened this week, I think it's pretty fair to discuss it. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, awesome. So first off, True Detective, which aired this last year, absolute juggernaut of the series. People loved it. People critically and audiences tuned into it. They absolutely loved it. And when creator Nick Pizzolatto, I think is how you pronounce his name, announced that the season 2 would be a whole new cast and a whole new story and be an anthology series, people got, you know, speculative about who was going to be in the season, who they wanted to see in the next second season, but the wait's finally over. They casted the four leads for season 2, which will be played by Colin Farrell, Vince Vaughn, Rachel McAdams, and Taylor Kitsch. What are you guys' initial thoughts on these casting choices?
Caroline, I'll let you go first.
Okay, well, I, you know, just first off, I am obsessed with season 1. It's, you know, probably one of my favorite series I've ever seen. I thought McConaughey and Harrelson were just knocked it out of the park. And then to get, I mean, you're telling me out of every single actor and actress in Hollywood that these are the four people that they were able to get signed on for season 2. When we had rumors, you know, going around of everybody from Jessica Chastain, Brad Pitt, I mean, huge names. I am pretty disappointed. I think Colin Farrell will be fine. Hopefully Vince Vaughn can kind of break out of his bromance, romantic comedy stereotype. Same with Rachel McAdams. You never know. I think Taylor Kitsch was probably a good casting. I think he's kind of untested.
Right. I was curious. Have you watched, because I know you like football, have you watched Friday Night Lights? I have not.
Yes, I've seen the series, you know, growing up in Texas. It's very accurate, and he's great in that one. I also liked him in Lone Survivor as well.
Yes, I would agree. I think that's when I kind of started coming around to him, because I've not watched the show. I've seen the movie, but I've not seen the show Friday Night Lights.
So he's still pretty untested, so I'm actually pretty excited about him, but I'm a little disappointed overall.
Fair enough. I'm with you a little bit. I don't know, Kyle, what are your overall thoughts before we continue?
Okay, with Vaughn, I don't understand at all. I mean, I think he's just gone so far downhill ever since Wedding Crashers and Dodgeball.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Colin Farrell, I have mixed feelings about, because he does have some good movies. Mm-hmm. The stuff he's been putting out lately has been total crap.
For the most part, yeah.
You know, I'm actually fine with Rachel McAdams and Taylor. I mean, I have no problem with them. I'm just more worried about Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn, to be honest.
All right, cool. Well, we got our feelings out in the open, so we can discuss them. Vince Vaughn, I definitely hear everyone's criticisms about. I'm a little concerned about it, but at the same time, he started out doing drama. So if he kind of returns to that a little bit, I think he's capable. It just depends if they're going to be able to get the performance they want out of him. So I don't know. We'll see about that one. He's playing a career criminal. He's not actually playing a detective. So I think that, giving it a little bit more context, I think he'll do better in that way. Colin Farrell, I'm not worried about at all. I think in the right role, and I think he can be really, really great, to be honest. I mean, in Bruges and Seven Psychopaths, he's terrific in. I mean, it sounds like mostly dark comedies, but we'll see. I think in the right role, he can be really, really good. And I just don't think he either needs to fire his agent or something, because he finds himself in a lot of, like, dull leading man roles. Yeah, Rachel McAdams, I'm not totally sure about. I'm kind of with you on that one, Lila. I don't know, because I haven't really seen a lot of stuff she's in.
She's just positioned herself as the go-to, like, romantic comedy lead. It's hard to see her as anything else. She's totally branded herself as that. So I think that's what's holding me back.
But she's got at least a charismatic presence. But I don't know. I don't know what the Nick Pizzolatto is going to go for on this one. I heard the season's going to be lighter, which, you know, relatively lighter, I'm sure, because season 1 is very dark. So, I don't know. I'm willing to let everyone, you know, have their time and see how they go. But I just, you know, the internet basically exploded when these casting choices were announced. So I figured it was something that would be good to talk about.
That's always safe to assume. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I definitely did speculate on it and figure out if they're going to do it. But yeah, I hear all the criticisms, but hopefully they'll pull it off, and we'll see next summer, I think, is when it's coming out. What actually has me a little, actually more, not concerned than the actors, but what I thought worked so well with the first season is that, first of all, it's like an 8-hour movie, really, and it was the same writer and director the whole series. Cary Fukunaga, I think that's how you pronounce his name, directed all 8 episodes, and which I think helped with like the non-linear back and forth, because they could record the two time periods at different times and not worry about that and just cut it together. But for season 2, they're gonna have different directors take it on, so I'm wondering how that's gonna like change the template of what season 1 set up.
Yeah, and then, we've got Justin Lin doing the first 2 episodes, I believe. And I mean, the Fast and Furious movies he's done are fine, but this is a totally different beast.
Yeah, but he started out doing like smaller movies like Better Luck Tomorrow, more like crime-based. So I'm happy to see him back to that. I think he's talented, but I wish if he was gonna do it, he was doing all 8 episodes. I think that would be cool. But we'll see. We'll see come next summer. Another show that actually aired last week, that was quite a big, or people were anticipating it, and it got pretty solid reviews from TV critics, is the season premiere of, or series premiere, excuse me, of Gotham, which we all got a chance to see the Batman prequel detective series. Kyle wrote the recap up on gotchamovies.com, so if you have a chance, you should read that. It's really, really well done. But
Thank
what
you.
Yeah, you're welcome. But what are your guys' overall thoughts on this new Batman tale?
Carla, I'll let you go first again.
Okay, I'll take it. Well, I read Kyle's review. I know, Ryan, you were not as excited as Kyle was, but I think I'm kind of leaning more towards Kyle on this one. I liked a lot of what they did. I know, first, the pilot episode, you're just introducing a lot of characters, and they introduce a ton, but I thought it looked great visually. I was really impressed with what they were able to do there, and it's got a solid cast. I love who they cast as Gordon, Ben McKenzie. So I think it's got a lot of potential. So I'm gonna stick with it.
All right, and Kyle, your opinions?
Okay, going in, that's gonna be another Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of thing, where it's just it's so overhyped. It just kind of just doesn't have as much steam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I felt for like a little bit of the episode. But going in, they start off with Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed. I was like, it's really one of the more graphic interpretations of them dying, because you see like their blood everywhere. Bruce is covered in it.
On primetime TV too.
Yeah, and with this whole thing, I thought it was really well done. I'm really a big fan of Jada Pinkett Smith, she plays this character named Fish Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's an actual Batman character. I think they just made her up, but I have to check again.
Yeah, I couldn't recall seeing her in anything before, or reading her in anything.
Yeah, for me, I only had two problems with the show. It's just, for one thing, they pack so many like Easter eggs and characters into one episode. It's just overwhelming. I mean, in the first 30 minutes, you already see Gordon, Harvey Bullock, the Penguin, the Riddler, Poison Ivy, Catwoman, Bruce Wayne, Alfred, and it just keeps going on. I'm just like, just stick with a couple.
Yes.
Because the one I felt that was really out of place was actually Poison Ivy. Because they're actually going to her house, and she's a little girl, and they're like, "Hi, what's your name?" She says, "Ivy, not Pam."
Yeah, I was wondering that too. And plus, I don't know what the mother's name was, but it wasn't Pamela. Like, it wasn't Isley, wasn't the surname, so I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, that's silly. But anyway, go ahead.
It's all right. And my other complaint is, I just don't like how this was, like, taken. There's that scene where Commissioner Gordon is trying to, like, calm Bruce down, tell him, like, everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt he was just way too strict in there. He was just so, like, emotionless. He's telling Bruce, like, perhaps just suck it up and be strong. I was like, that's really out of place. But I mean, you see him again with Bruce at the very end, and that feels a lot more like acceptable, because he's telling him, like, okay, I think we caught the guy, but guess what? We actually didn't. So if you want my badge, I'm going to retire right now. And I feel like I failed you. And Bruce is like, no, I want him to be out there. I want him to be alive. I want you to find him. I want you to bring him to justice, or else I'm going to do it myself later on.
Yeah, no, I agree. Ben McKenzie, I mean, I think he's a really solid actor, like you said, Lila, and I think he will do solid, but I feel like there's a lot of contradiction to his performance with the style of the series, which I'm going to be flat out honest, like Lila kind of mentioned at the beginning, hers, I was really not on board this show, but granted, you can never judge a show entirely by its pilot, so I will at least watch episode 2 to see where it goes. I did not like they just added and introduced characters winkingly. So, why is like, we can't have things just happen anymore. Like there has to be like coincidence and the reason like, oh, the Penguin and the Riddler and blah, 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 Catwoman. They were there at the time of Bruce Wayne's or, Thomas and Martha Wayne's death. They were there when Bruce Wayne, had that moment. I was like, no, they weren't. That's the stupidest thing that I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Besides like, Ivy, the other cameo I hated the most was the Riddler because he's in like the special crimes unit or something.
Yeah, he's like in the evidence room or something like that. And I was like, that's not. I mean, I'm doing what I hate and like judging things by the comics, and because I like things to be their own entity. But like, I don't know. There was a point where I was like, okay, I was not on board the series. I think it's just a fundamental, just like it's crazy. Lila, you and I usually see eye to eye, even if we don't agree, but like, I didn't like this show visually. I thought it was like horrible, like green screen cinematography. I thought it looked horrible. I thought the tone was all over the place. Like part of them was going for like a like cartoonish Dick Tracy, but the other part of them was going for like a hard boiled detective drama. And it ended up just being like a crappy procedural that you would normally see on Fox. And I just was not really on board, except for Jada Pinkett Smith. I think she knew what the show was supposed to be and was on its wavelength, but like nobody else seemed to be on it. And it was just like really, really bad, I thought. And the reviews were really positive, and I everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I was kind of baffled. I didn't think it was going to be met with this much positive response.
Yeah, I actually have to disagree with you on, like, you know, the scenery and the setting. For me, this seemed like a mesh of, you know, Joel Schumacher's, like, super anticipation of, like, what a comic book movie should be like, and Christopher Nolan's, you know, like, surrealism of Gotham. Mm-hmm. I felt it was a combination of two, and I actually kind of liked it a little bit.
And that's,
you can tell when it's really real, and you can tell when it's, like, comic book-y, and it looked really good to me.
Well, and that's, you know, to each their own, and I think you bring up a good point. I actually agree. That's a really good analogy. I think it is a mesh of Schumacher and Nolan, and I think that's why I don't like it, to be honest. I'm kind of like, you know, go one way or the other, but don't try and do both. I think that's where I'm at. Like, if it was going for the Joel Schumacher, which, you know, God forbid anybody should, but I mean, those movies look good, the two that he did. Like, they're terrible movies, but they look good. So, because you can still do a good movie with that sort of style, or a good TV show. So if it was just that style, or just trying to ape Nolan's style, that'd be one thing. But like, I think it tries to do both, and it's the same way I felt about Gangster Squad. Did either of you end up seeing that movie from last year?
Oh, yeah,
it's really bad. It was in my bottom 10 for last year. It's the same problem I had with that show, or that movie, because it was like, a cartoonish, like, visual style, but yet there's, like, this shocking ultra-violence in it, and I just, like, it doesn't work. The cinematography's ugly, and it just doesn't fit, and I felt like Gotham was exactly what I felt about that show. But again, I will watch the second episode, because you can't just judge a show by the pilot. The pilot is basically what you got to sell the network on. So we'll see.
Yeah, like for me, again, I'm bringing up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, I thought it was just okay, and I stuck with the second episode just to see the Nick Fury cameo.
Mm-hmm.
But even after that, I was just like, I think I'll just give this a break for a while. But with Gotham, I'm actually really interested to see the second episode.
I feel the same way, Kyle. I think I just subconsciously, like when I was watching it, was comparing it to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how different it was. And I guess I prefer the Nolan-esque sort of vibe. So I think that's kind of why I'm leaning towards Gotham as opposed to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's just, they're separating themselves from what Marvel's doing as a machine. I think they're just trying to go totally opposite direction.
Yeah, I will give them props for doing that. And, well, first of all, I'm surprised Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is even still on. Like, its ratings are dropping pretty quick. But I think it will probably, I think because it's Marvel, they're going to give the benefit of the doubt. I will agree with you guys in that I don't like Gotham's visual style, but I give them props for trying to do something distinctive and their own. Because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just a very bland, cookie-cutter look to it. So I don't like Gotham's look, but I give them credit for trying.
Yeah, for me, again, I mean, I'm just so glad it did something just different from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's not the same kind of thing where, you know, just because there's a brand name attached to it doesn't mean it's going to be good.
Absolutely.
But with DC, this turned around because, you know, some of their movies have been pretty bad as of late, especially with, you know, like, the last couple of years with Green Lantern, yeah. But, like, they redeemed themselves here, and the main thing why I'm really interested for the second episode is because Catwoman finally says something instead of just skulking around for, like, the whole episode, so...
Yeah.
I'm actually getting excited to see something, so...
Well, yeah. Like I said, I'll give it another chance. I'll watch episode 2, but I'll have to DVR it. But I'll watch it.
Mr. McCall.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you. We're looking into a homicide that occurred 2 weeks ago. 5 dead. Russian restaurant.
Oh, yeah. I heard about it on TV. I happened to be there that night.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. You wouldn't be here if I wasn't.
That's right. We're just checking to see if any of the patrons remembered anything suspicious that night.
Not that I recall.
May I ask why you dined at that particular restaurant?
Like Porosky.
You didn't stay long.
I didn't check my watch.
I see. Wow. Thanks for your cooperation.
Very well.
I'll be in touch.
Don't you want to leave me your card, officer? In case I remember anything? That's what you policemen usually do, right?
Must have given them all out.
How'd you find me? I paid cash. We didn't have a reservation. How'd you find me?
Well, that's what we do, Mr. McCall.
We who?
Find people we need to find.
We who?
So as far as the films released in wide release this weekend, there were two. One of them, you and I, Lila, both got to see, which is The Equalizer, which was actually the number one film at the box office this weekend, based on the 80s television show, loosely based, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah, very loosely based.
Very loose.
Stars Denzel Washington, reteams with his Training Day director, Antoine Fuqua. And so what were your overall thoughts on The Equalizer?
You know, you had kind of given me a heads up going in because you knew I was really looking forward to this one. A big fan of Denzel and kind of anything that he does, and I lowered my expectations, so I didn't totally hate it. I really loved when the action scenes really worked well. A lot of it, I think, was just script problems. There's a whole lot of supporting characters who have a lot to say that shouldn't be there, shouldn't be saying a lot. It kind of takes away from the character development as well. I wish that we'd been able to spend some more time with Robert McCall and kind of learn why he is the way he is and what makes him tick. I came out a little disappointed. I did love it visually. I liked the action scenes. You know, they took some time to kind of try to make them original, a little different, which I enjoyed because a lot of these revenge thrillers are just... there's the Russian mob again, you know, we gotta go take them out.
Yes.
But they tried to do some original stuff with the action scene, so I did appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I think the action scenes make this movie be not entirely dismissible, because it's about one step away from being a just utterly dismissible film in my book, but that Antoine Fuqua really knows how to stage action, and I felt
like he
really lost that sensibility in his last film he directed, which was Olympus Has Fallen, which I thought, like, I just thought it was, like, visually ugly and just all CGI ridden, and just was not on board that movie at all. And the story in this movie I wasn't on board with, but, like, I thought the action was very clean and well orchestrated. The scene, like, where he times himself and goes after the criminals, or even the final set piece, which basically takes place in a Home Depot.
Yeah.
I thought was...
really fun, actually.
It was fun, though. Yeah. I spent about half of that. There's a song that plays during it, and I spent about half of it trying to figure out what trailer it was from.
Yeah, me and, too. I was like, what is this?
It was from the Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit trailer.
Okay.
Which is
no random. No wonder I forgot.
Yeah, exactly. It's random fun fact. But the problem I have with a lot of these revenge movies is that, like you said, we don't really get enough development of Denzel Washington's character. We get, like, the obligatory expositional scene, like, towards the third act of the movie where you find out, like, his past and why he's capable of doing the things that he does. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really develop. He's just, like, a stone-cold person. Just a stoic person, and you're like, okay, well, how is he capable of pulling all this up? Why does he work at Home Depot? This movie should just be called Depot Man. It doesn't make sense. And I think Denzel's solid. I just don't think he's given a lot of character development, and it suffers from the, like, Taken mentality of just, like, you know, watching somebody kick butt, watching somebody in their, like, late 50s, early 60s. Kick a lot of butt. And there's one other thing. The fact that the movie goes so far out of its way to show Robert McCall, Denzel's character, as such a good guy. Like, he's helping one of the employees of the Home Depot become a security guard, like, helping him, like, lose weight. And it's like they go so far out of the way to show he's good so that the audience will forgive him for, like, the horrible things he's about to do later in the movie.
Yeah. And opening scene, they're pushing it down your throat. This is a good guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just like, you know, he's like, you know, you got to eat your healthy food. And then he goes to the diner and, you know, has conversations with a young prostitute who's played by Chloe Grace Moretz, who's only in this movie for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, she was really, really strong in this one, too, I thought. She's usually great overall. I really wish she would have had some more screen time.
Well, I wish she had more to do. I mean, I think she did, like, fine with the material she was given. I mean, she's talented, but it's like, you know, she's the inciting incident, basically. She's the reason that he starts going on this killing spree. But, like, halfway through the movie, and then she comes back at the end, and you forget. You're like, oh, yeah, that's why he does the things that he does.
Yeah. And it's like they're just, you know, acquaintances, basically. They didn't really take time to establish why he cared about this girl so much to go and take out all the Russian mob in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I felt a lot of this movie and actually literally laughable. I was at a just press screening of this movie last week, the week before it came out, and a lot of us were, like, cackling in the theater of just how generic the plot of the movie is. I think that's what's disappointing, is, like, Denzel and Antoine Fuqua can elevate this type of material, because, like, Training Day, if you go back and watch that movie, I mean, as much as a good movie it is, it's a really generic detective movie, like, if you think about it. But, like, just Fuqua's style and Washington and Ethan Hawke's performance really elevate that movie. And it just doesn't elevate it this time. But I have to give Fuqua a props for being such a skilled director with action. It makes you wish the movie was better.
Yeah, I think a lot of that just comes down to script problems. The guy, I believe his name's Richard Wink, he wrote the script. He wrote The Expendables 2. Oh. So that, I think, had a lot to do with the big holes plot-wise.
Was there even a script for The Expendables 2? I thought they just traded one-liners the whole movie.
That's what you would think, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's not much of a plot to that movie, so that explains a lot. Was that his only, like, screenwriting credit, or did he have some more?
His only big one. A lot of the other stuff I hadn't even heard of, but...
Okay, I might have to look. They might be, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme movies that went straight to DVD or something like that.
Probably are, yeah.
And I would know.
but, you know, it looks like they're hoping it's going to take off as a series, so maybe... Equalizer 2, whatever it's going to be, will learn from its mistakes.
Maybe
so.
It has
a lot of potential.
Absolutely. And it has potential. Hopefully it will correct it. Hopefully. Because, yeah, they do that now. Like, every movie, they're like, oh, we're trying to launch a franchise. It just happens to be that way. Equalizer just made $35 million this weekend. It'll probably happen. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah,
I think so. if you're an action junkie, I would say it's worth the watch just for the climax. It was really, really fun.
The climax is fun. It's probably worth a rental for that regard.
Yeah.
Watch it with some friends. Get some beer and pizza. I know I say that a lot, but like that's probably the best route for this movie. It's not it's not a good 10 a.m. screening with just press movie. definitely not. But they did show it in the IMAX screen, so that was cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was good to watch. But all in all, it's kind of the other thing too. This movie is way too long. It is 2 hours and 10 minutes long, and it feels that length. Like, it feels really slow.
They could have easily trimmed out that 10 minutes and just rounded it out at 2 hours, easily.
Yeah, I think so. Or even, like, 1 hour 40, I think, could have sufficed and just, like, move those set pieces closer together.
It felt long, too, because, you know, the first third of the movie, we're just establishing that he lives by himself and he works at a home improvement store, basically.
Yeah, that's all that you learn about it. Could have cut so much of that out. Though before we get off the Equalizer, I have to give a shout out to the guy with the villain. I don't remember his name. I'll have to figure that out. But he plays like the Russian fixer who comes in on these things.
Yeah.
I thought the scenes with just him and Denzel were actually legitimately good, and they held weight. And it's like, why can the whole movie just be like that? I think that guy should be a Bond villain. Like, he's
definitely
wrong in it. So
there was actually one really great shot. I wanted to ask if you noticed it too, where he's sitting shirtless. He has all his tattoos on. Mm-hmm. And the camera, he like leans back in his chair, and the camera just like spans over his body, and it was just like, and it turns with him.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a cool shot.
Yeah, really cool.
Unfortunately, I wasn't like on that movie's wavelength, so I kind of like I chuckled at like his almost like orgasmic face that he makes when that happens, but it's a really cool shot. I will agree. Though I have to say, I had more fun in the like 5 minute scene in The Wolf of Wall Street when Jordan Belfort's dad, played by Rob Reiner, is watching The Equalizer on TV.
and
swearing.
Nice.
Like,
nice shout out.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. But yeah, basically, Lila more warmer on the film than I am, but neither of us really like fully recommend it. Just not to go out and see, especially with some really strong films coming out in October, which we'll get to.
Save your money.
Yeah, save your money for something else. Like, if you're going to see a movie that came out this weekend, I would recommend a film that I got to see, which is The Box Trolls. Totally different film from The Equalizer, definitely. It's a new film from Leica Studios, who's based here in Portland. And their studio did Coraline and Paranorman. I don't think this film is necessarily as strong as those ones. The story is basically involves this guy. His name is Archibald Snatcher, who's voiced by Ben Kingsley. Wonderful voice performance by Ben Kingsley. And lives in the town of Cheezleton. And or Cheezleville, it's something to do with cheese. And so he basically goes to this lord. He wants a white hat. He wants to join the society and be able to eat cheese with the lords of the land. And so who's played by Jared Harris. And he says, if you get rid of all the box trolls, which are these creatures who live under the city, then we'll get you a white hat. So he tries to exterminate all the box trolls, especially like what kicked it off is a kid was allegedly kidnapped by the box trolls. You find later more about that later on. But it's a very like simplistic plot. It's just Ben Kingsley's character and his minions, who are voiced by Richard Ayoade, Nick Frost, and Tracy Morgan, basically them trying to extinguish the box trolls and then them trying to like vanquish evil. It's very simplistic, but like the animation, it's stop motion, like Coraline and Paranorman. It's incredibly well done. Visually, it's really appealing to look at. I saw it in 3D. The 3D is really solid in the movie too. It is funny and visually stunning and relatively short and has some solid voice work. So like, it doesn't reach the heights of Paranorman, but I think I would recommend it overall. It's worth watching. So, a really brief review about that film, but I think it's worth your time.
Yeah, Jenny was a big fan as well of that one.
Yes, she a much bigger fan than I. She wrote, which you can read her review up at gotchamovies.com. It's really strong. And she was a really big fan of it. I was a little cooler on it, but I still had a really good time with it. And I love stop motion animation. I love that the movie did like relatively decent in the box office. It was third this week, but with the 17 million, which is a level that most stop motion films don't reach. So that was exciting to see, and exciting to see that word is catching on it. And the box troll creatures are just really like creative and kind of adorable, to be honest. So it's
awesome.
Yeah, it's a good watch. So before we sign off from this episode, this will be the last episode for September since October is upon us. So we're going to talk about some films that we're really looking forward to for the month of October. I think the big one, at least for all three of us, is the first film of October, the first big film, which is Gone Girl. Am I safe to assume that is correct?
Oh yeah, big time.
Yeah, totally.
Since we've all read the book. It is the new film from David Fincher, who's just a master filmmaker, did Social Network, Seven, Fight Club, Zodiac, the list goes on and on. I'm really, really excited for that movie. The author, Gillian Flynn, wrote the screenplay, and I think it's going to be really strong.
Definitely one of the most anticipated of the year for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mine too.
So, I'm just interested to see how like everything's going to play out, because, I mean, there's been hype about how the ending's been changed from the book, and I don't know how they're going to do that exactly, but, I mean, it could work out. It just needs to depend on, like, how far they take it, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, who knows? I've heard they changed the ending. They could just be trying to drum up excitement for people to see it. I don't know, but as we kind of agreed off the cuff without spoiling anything, the ending's kind of perfect to the book. So hopefully they stick with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. Are there any other October time? I have a long list, but any other ones you guys are like really looking forward to?
Yeah, I do. But again, I'll let Lila go first. So.
Well, thank you, Kyle. Such gentlemen on the podcast. I like it.
No problem.
I'm really looking forward to Fury as well, Brad Pitt. It looks really good. I'm a big fan of the director as well, so that one looks like it's gonna be great.
David Ayer, who did End of Watch, yeah. Fury looks really, really strong. Talented. Great ensemble too. Brad Pitt, Michael Pena, John Bernthal from Walking Dead,
Logan Lerman,
Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, and it's shot on film too. It looks gorgeous. I'm really excited for that movie. The more I see footage of it, the more I'm like really, really convinced that it's going to be a strong film.
Yeah, I also want to give a quick shout out to White Bird in a Blizzard. It goes on limited release October 24th. I actually rented it on iTunes on VOD last night. Loved it. Really strong performances. Shailene Woodley. It's fantastic. Eva Green does crazy better than anyone else in Hollywood. She's fantastic. So if you guys were looking for something to watch on VOD this week, or if you want to catch it the 24th on a limited release, highly recommend it.
Good. I've heard good things about it. I'm glad to hear that you're on board that film as well. I do like Shailene Woodley. I think she's good even in films that I don't like. I really didn't like Divergent. I really didn't like The Fault in Our Stars, but I thought she was good in both those movies.
She's great. Eva Green, she's the scene stealer in that one. She's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, she usually does that. She did that twice this year in two movies that like really weren't good, 300 Rise of an Empire and Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, but she was the best part about both of those movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Kyle, you got a couple you're looking forward to?
Yeah, okay, well, besides Gone Girl, I mean, October 10th, there's going to be two big releases that day. I'm interested to see Dracula Untold, because I grew up watching the Dracula movies, like, as a kid. I mean, yeah, I've seen, like, pretty much all of them, even the ones with Christopher Lee in it, so...
Oh, nice.
Interested to see how that goes down. I think The Judge will be okay, but, I mean, I might end up seeing it, I might not.
It's got a solid pair of leads, you know. Yeah. So it's Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. So hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah, Fury again. It looks good, but I mean, I'm just worried about LaBeouf in it. But other than that, I mean, I'm fine with that. But
I'm not a big fan either. But I think any actor can do fine under the right direction. So I have faith in David Ayer that he won't be much of a distraction, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also hyped up for Horns and Nightcrawler, but I mean, it's hard for me to see Jake Gyllenhaal doing anything better than Prisoners right now, because that was just perfect for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, everybody says it's better, but I mean, I'll have to see it to believe it.
Have you seen Enemy yet?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. I thought he was great in that, too.
I just thought Prisoners was better.
Yeah, I don't think Prisoners is a better movie, to each their own, but I could see. But his performance is really strong in Prisoners. I think his performance is really, really good in that movie and with Enemy. So hopefully, I don't know. I'm glad to hear that he's great in Nightcrawler and that he's doing really interesting, dark, edgy films. I like that.
Yeah, at first I was a little disappointed because I was like, oh man, is this like a solo movie for like the X-Men character? And they're like, oh. It's not, never mind, but whatever.
yeah. I honestly would watch a Nightcrawler movie, X-Men one, because he was the best part about X-Men 2. And then he never returned to the movies for some weird reason. Go figure. I got a couple I'm looking for outside of Gone Girl and Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is definitely high up. I'm looking forward to Birdman. A new Alejandro González Iñárritu. I can never pronounce his last name, so forgive me if somebody calls me out on that. But
just say the Michael Keaton movie.
That's true, the Michael Keaton movie. I got to give credit to the director, though, too. I love Amores Perros. 21 Grams and Babel and Beautiful. I don't know. I feel like he kept making the same like miserablest film over and over, especially 21 Grams and Babel, because it was like same of that, like... that like crash, everything's connected, everything comes together, which I really don't like that story structure. But Birdman just looks like something incredibly different and unique, and really, really excited to see that. Fury's on my list as well. I have to give a shout out to a couple others, so bear with me. I'm looking forward to Leggies, the new Lynn Shelton film. Seattle filmmaker, being from the Pacific Northwest, I have to go see it, and I'm really excited for it. I'm interested in Men, Women, and Children, the new Jason Reitman film. I've heard a lot of mixed things on the festival circuit, but I liked Thank You for Smoking, Up in the Air, and what's the other one? Young Adult. Not so much Labor Day, as Lila and I discussed earlier this year.
Yes.
Labor Day, kind of a misfire, but a big fan of his other films, so hopefully it'll be a return to form. And Whiplash, which was like the indie darling out of Sundance this year.
Yeah. I'm very excited about that one too, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Miles sure. Teller's, J.K. Simmons, a buddy of mine who works at the Northwest Film Center, has already seen Whiplash and has said it's really, really good.
Such an interesting premise too. You don't see a lot of jazz music themed drama.
Yeah.
So just looks really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. It looks fantastic, and I've heard and can see by the trailer that J.K. Simmons is just incredible. I don't like to place a lot of prestigiousness on the Academy Awards because I don't think they're necessarily the best gauge of quality. But my buddy said that he didn't see how J.K. Simmons doesn't get a supporting actor nomination because he's that great in it.
When has he ever been not great?
It's true. I agree, man. He's been really, really strong. I mean, Labor Day, maybe. Not to keep harping on that movie.
Yeah, he was in that one.
For like a minute. Like one or two scenes, which I think was one of our issues about the movie, of how distracting like the cameos were, or how distracting the small roles were.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire out of I don't know,
James Vanderbeek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, so many.
Yeah, it was just not a good movie at all. But yeah, that's October's looking really, really strong, because I gotta say September was kind of a bummer.
It was miserable.
Yeah, it was. Usually September always has like other than Tusk, like there wasn't anything. September usually always has like that one like interesting movie. Like Drive came out in September, Looper came out in September, of their respective years. I'm trying to think what came out last year in September, but had to have been some, well, Prisoners came out last year in September, so like there was that. Yeah, I don't know. This September just wasn't really up to par. So here's hoping to a better October.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I would say that concludes our 25th episode of the Gotcha Movies podcast. As always, you can check out all our news and reviews at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Gotcha Movies. This podcast is on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to us. If you like the show, leave a comment or a rating. It helps us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. If you enjoy this podcast, you can check out the other podcasts that I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Eric McClanahan and Octay Ege-Kozak. And we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss it. And that podcast is also on iTunes, so be sure to check it out. But without further ado, thank you guys for logging on this morning and recording. Love talking movies with you guys, so glad to talk to you again. And Lila, thank you for coming on. Long time no talk.
Right? I'm very, very excited to be back.
And thank you, Kyle, as well.
No problem. Yeah, it's been a while for me, too. Glad to be back, too.
All right. Yeah, glad to have you back. So, yeah, be sure to tune back next week for our review of Gone Girl.
Yes.
I'm so excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
As you all know, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, disappeared 3 days ago.
Maybe the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret. Maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song that summer sings, maybe the chill that autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day.
You can't go on like this.
Why, it's not good enough for you?
It's not even close.
She may be the reason I survive, the why and wherefore I'm alive, the one I'll care for through the rough and rainy years. Me, I'll take her laughter and her tears and make them all my souvenirs. Where she goes, I've got to be. The meaning of my life is she. She.
Stay back, everybody, stay back.
I did not kill my wife. I am not a murderer.